we're on our own. It's just regular people like us. It's moms and dads, and we don't have money behind us or anybody. It's really just us. We sell t-shirts so we can have picnics and stuff. Like, that's really, it's that, like, homemade. But it works.
It's grassroots, and I'm proud of that. Very proud. Yeah. This is grassroots.
It is.
So, and we're going to continue to win with the grassroots. Hi, you're listening to We Are Reopen Bucks. In this series, we sit down with some of the key players in the reopen movement and discuss their experiences navigating the pandemic. Today, I'm sitting down with Matthew Simpkins, who teaches physics at an Upper Bucks high school. Matt joined Reopen Bucks over the summer of 2020 and since then has been an outspoken advocate for getting schools back to normal. Welcome, Mr. Simpkins. Thanks for coming on to teach me something today.
Yeah, thanks, Josh, for having me. Been following you guys for a long time. Big fan of the graphs you made of all the different school districts and how masks. Things have gone and haven't gone. And gosh, I just want to like put the nail in the coffin to all this terrible stuff that we did to kids with this conversation tonight here, hopefully. So
Yeah. You have a great, unique perspective because, you know, obviously schools were such a key part of the Reopen Bucks story. And I think just COVID reopening in general, it seems like what happened with schools was the most severe of it. We kind of took a lot of our anxiety out on kids as a society, maybe. So from your perspective as a teacher, let's just start with the beginning of what you had to deal with, this thing called COVID hits. You're forced right into, I presume, like fully distance learning. What's that like?
Yeah, you know, this image comes to mind. I was in the cafeteria and kids were passing around memes like, do something, because of course, as a high school student, you hear other schools are closing and they're like, yeah, we want to close our school too. That whole impetus though of like somebody do something, boy, did that really put us in a bad spot. So the school shut down in March of 2020. They tell the kids, take your laptops home. We'll see you in 2 weeks, right? Teachers, bring your stuff. And we were kind of in a holding pattern because we had Canvas, which is our online learning thing at the time, but we, you know, so we had ways to push students work pretty easily. And they were like, yeah, just kind of, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks and we'll figure it out. But from there, of course, as we know, 2 weeks became another 2 weeks. And so then we were kind of in this limbo of like everybody scrambling around. What kind of standards are we going to have? What's class going to look like? What do we want to expect the students to do? And it was total chaos, to be honest. I mean, like, there's a lot of balancing factors. You know, I teach physics. I teach a lot of really sharp kids, and I want to provide them with good content. The AP exams were still coming, as far as I knew, like from March to May. So that's when I actually started Simpkins Physics Corner, and I started like YouTube live streaming my kids.
So that started because of the COVID, the virtual learning.
Yeah, that's why that's I have a YouTube cool. channel, and because there was no direction from the district, they were still figuring out, you know, what is this going to look like, and I'm there like, these kids are waiting for something from me. So how can I just reach out to them? So yeah, I was doing like evening live streams, because that's when kids are actually awake and want to learn stuff. and it was really great. I mean, just the first couple of weeks, just trying to stay engaged with my students. That was the high flyers though. Like, you know, the kids that are like, hey, AP exams coming. Boy, my academic level students, totally different story, you know, because, you know, we weren't shooting for a goal and there wasn't really a standard established yet. So they were kind of like, yeah, hey, we're going to enjoy the vacation while we have it, which trust me, I totally get. As a 16-year-old, I probably wouldn't have done the same thing. But we were in this position where there were several weeks and we kept hoping, hey, like we didn't want to put too much effort into developing standards because we might go back. And then of course, I forget the exact date, but you know, we made 3 or 4 months worth of a decision based on 2 weeks of data that was pretty shaky at the time to completely close schools all the way. And so that's when we really had to start figuring out what was going on from there.
Yeah. So you go through the rest of that school year, the 2019 to 2020 school year, basically didn't go back. Do you as a teacher feel pretty confident in saying that you observed what you would call learning loss from just those months?
I mean, I wouldn't even call it learning loss. I'd call it like just tragic abandonment. I mean, I took it on myself to do as much as I could. And a lot of teachers, you know, got creative. They were making videos. They were trying to reach out to their classes.
I mean, the YouTube thing is wildly creative. Like, yeah, let's just start throwing the stuff on there. And
yeah, but I'm also a 32-year-old. So like, I know how to do that stuff. And so I actually have a couple of friends whose kids go to online charter schools right now, but they're built from the ground up to be an online school. All right. Well, we had the situation was like all these teachers are totally thrown into, hey, we're going to turn real school into virtual school or something. And no one really had any idea what they were doing. So it just totally didn't serve the kids, which is why from the very beginning, you know, I just felt bad. Like, we have a social compact with society, right? Like, you pay real estate taxes, we educate your kids. Mm. And we absolutely violated the social compact. And there's just totally nagging me. Like, you can ask my wife. I mean, I was up till 1-2 o'clock in the morning, a lot of nights, just like frantically going over COVID data. Like, I just dove into it because I was like, my kids are suffering right now. And a lot of them just disappeared. Even in March, and then April, when we finally said, like, hey, here's what we're doing for class, you know, kids started checking in less and less. And some of these kids, like, I knew they were going through family issues, or I knew they were going through just a rough life and some hard times. And I had no way of knowing if they were okay. And I lost a lot of sleep over that. And that just really bothered me because I had no way of knowing whether my students were good.
It's rough.
So getting to the end of the year, it was just kind of like dragging across the finish line. And then, of course, there was a bunch of decisions made, I'm sure in all the schools probably, but we set really low bars and low standards and kind of just pushed everybody through. And then we actually reaped the harvest of that, you know, the next year when we came back, whether it was virtual or hybrid or whatever. But I would describe that time as like my frantic dive into COVID data. So I'm a physics teacher, right? I'm not an epidemiologist, as I've been told many times, but I have a degree in physics and math. I mean, there's even my buddies who went to med school say that they suck at physics. So I don't know where that puts me, but I know how to read a data table and I know how to read scientific literature. So I just went on this crazy deep dive, and the whole time I'm like, what are we doing? Like, this doesn't make any sense at all. So I would say a lot of my time I spent not doing the YouTube channel or reaching out to students in April and May was spent, like, you know, on JAMA and, you know, PubMed and all these places, like trying to get a hold, because I wanted to advocate for my kids. And a lot of them, you know, they were just like, hey, when are we coming back? And as somebody who they look to as like a guy who knows science, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why we're even out of school right now, you know, which of course I can't say everything I want to students. There's that certain professional barrier you have there, of course. But I don't know. I just, that time of year was just spent diving into like, what is happening and how come other places in the world aren't doing what we are, and how are we going to best serve students? And the shutdowns did not serve students.
Yeah. At what point in that story, when you're just figuring out COVID, it sounds like a very similar story to what a lot of people on, like, I'll call it team reality, went through. You just eventually you start looking behind the curtain and you're like, this doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So where in that story did you eventually come to the point where you're like, okay, even though I'm a teacher, even though, like, there's teachers unions in schools, probably the majority of your colleagues are just hook, line, and sinker all about COVID. When did you decide to kind of go public, for lack of a better term, or like speak to your students about it, or, you know, say things about it?
Well, that was the most disheartening thing, is like, you know, I'm around a lot of smart people, and there's other science teachers, right? There's people with high degrees, there's people that call themselves doctor this or that, right? I just assumed that everybody would be doing the same thing as me, like on the quest for truth. But it seemed like, you know, I engaged with a couple people on Facebook that I work with, and they were just like spouting out bumper stickers and talking points. And so I was trying to appeal to them. I'm like, here's how many, you know, here's the fatality rates for flu and for COVID, and it's less for COVID than it is for flu. We never did this before. So, like, can you explain that? And they're like, well, we don't know, you know? And so by the summertime in July, that's when, you know, the buzz in the media was Donald Trump says that we should reopen schools, right? And I saw this. It was like a switch went off on Facebook and on social media. All the media, all the teachers were like, oh my God, we're going to die. Like, it was, I'll be honest, Josh, it was an embarrassing time to be part of education, because you see these like teachers putting body bags outside of their school buildings, like protesting, like, we're going to die if you send us back into the COVID war zone. I'm like, dude, people, get a grip, first of all. Like, second of all, read a book and read some scientific literature. And then, like, this is what you signed up. Like, this is what we do. Right? This is our job for students. So in July, as like, I started, you know, the research was culminating. I was pushing back against that narrative that upset some of my colleagues. I was trying to appeal to them, like, guys, we can do this. Like, we really can. And it was just really sad to me that a lot of people, you know, kind of fell victim to that narrative of, well, Trump said it's what we should do, so we should obviously not do that, right? Yeah. So much so, I think it was even August of 2020, where there was like a you know, pretty left-leaning news source that was like, guys, yes, Trump said we should go back to school. Don't pay any attention to him. We actually do need to go back to school. Like, this is going to be really bad for kids. And I was like, guys, it's right here. Like, here it is. So in July, I made this pretty long YouTube video just looking around the world. I was looking at data from Scotland, from Australia, from France, from Israel, like what happens when you open schools, how are they doing it? And I just presented scientific data. I didn't mention any politicians. I didn't mention any parties. I was like, teachers, it's time for us to be the heroes, right? Everybody was about healthcare heroes, and that's great. But I was like, dude, teachers, like we need to be the heroes. It's our time to step up. And I was just really disappointed that there weren't as many people, at least publicly, saying like, yeah, teachers, like, this is game time. Like, this is our time. You know, the healthcare workers have been holding it down in the hospitals through the worst of it. And firefighters have been showing up. You know, police are still doing their job. Essential workers are out there. Don't get me started on essential and non-essential. But yeah, I was like, teachers, this we're essential. Like, let's go do this. And the number of teachers that were totally on the opposite side of that was just really disappointing. And so you mentioned the union, like I'm not in a teacher's union or anything. And I would highly recommend any teachers listen to your previous episode with Karen. That was a great episode. I've always kind of been an independent thinker, I guess you could say. And it just was really sad to me that emotions got weaponized. Actually, fear got weaponized, right? And, you know, it just so happened to be leading up into a presidential election, right? Yeah.
It was a perfect storm.
So I kept wrestling with this. I'm like, I don't want to go there and say like, this is, you know, but if you, and this is actually why I reached out to you originally with Reopen Bucks, is because you guys wanted to get businesses open, right? And I was like, you can't do that until we get schools open. And the whole deal was like, if parents send their kids back to school and everybody's fine, then everybody starts looking around. They're like, oh, we sent the kids back to school. Like, maybe we can have our businesses open, and maybe we don't need to do this like 6 feet stuff with, like, you know, yeah, because that works against aerosolized viruses, or, you know, putting a piece of fabric in front of our face, like all those things. You know, if the schools got reopened and we actually stepped into reality there and realized, yeah, we can do this, then that's going to just destroy the whole narrative. And so, you know, some people are going to be offended when I say that, but it's like, you know, that's the trajectory that we were on. And so many people were against opening schools, because if we did that, then it'd be really obvious over to go to the next step, right?
This is exactly why, actually, you're describing case in point why we took the mask position when we did super early, when masks were first rolling out as like mandates. This is what you need to do. And everybody across the full spectrum, even reopen groups, were like, yeah, put on the mask so we can get the businesses open, like mask, 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 mask. And we're like, yeah, the masks are the pandemic. Actually, when you look around, this is what's keeping the fear and anxiety up. It's perpetuating this idea that we can't just go back to normal life. And I still believe to this day that if they didn't get away with mandating masks, if people pushed back on it, you would have gone out in the world and it would have looked kind of normal. And that causes people to just kind of look around and wonder like, okay, wait, what's going on with all this other stuff? You can't do all the nonsense unless, you know, you're doing it all together. It's all kind of like domino effect.
Yeah, they call it the Swiss cheese model, but it's really just like full of holes altogether, you know? And so as soon as you actually do a scientific exploration of a mitigation measurement, like one-way hallways, for example, all right? So you probably saw those in the grocery store.
That saved trillions of lives.
Well, you probably saw them in the grocery store. It was even worse in schools because, like, so I'm on a floor where we have three stairwells, right? But because we had one-way hallways, we would take all the students on the first floor and they would all go up, guess what? One stairwell, because we had to go in one direction. So let me get this straight. You're trying to social distance kids, so you take three lanes of traffic and turn it into one, and you cram them all into one stairwell. Like, so on its face, it's just ridiculous, right? Not to mention like the MIT modeling studies where they're like, yeah, actually one directional traffic is worse than two directional traffic because it's aerosolized. And I'm a science guy, so I really want to get nerdy sometimes, but like, The big thing, like, if I think mask, but 6 feet, I think was the worst for schools. 6 feet absolutely was the worst thing for schools. And that was predicated on a droplet model of transmission. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm a science teacher.
I'm so frustrated with this that they said droplet, 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 yeah, all of 2020. And then finally, middle of 2021, CDC just quietly is like, oh, yeah, we were wrong. That it was aerosolized the whole time.
Yeah. And crazy. So here's your physics lesson for tonight, right? Force of gravity accelerates everything down at 9.8 meters per second squared. So when a large droplet comes out of your mouth, it falls at that rate. That's why it only makes it about 6 feet. I'm picturing a horizontal velocity projectile problem in my head, but when you're breathing out aerosols, which are fine particulates for those people that don't know, like they're not, they don't behave at like a Newtonian particle under the influence of the force of gravity.
Yeah.
And one of the best Twitter follows I ever found was Megan Mansell, I think is her name. She's an industrial hygienist, which is, there's only a couple hundred in the country. And that is a professional who certifies businesses that are making OSHA regulations per the particulate they're trying to mitigate against. So if you were working in an asbestos factory or something, they don't have this anymore, but if you were removing asbestos, she would go in and say, yes, you guys are properly mitigating for the particulate size, you know, that you claim to be. Well, COVID, since it's spread through aerosolized particles primarily, right? Like the 6 feet thing is completely nonsense. I still see plexiglass in restaurants. Oof, I'm like, dude,
so tough.
Like, do you even know how air works? Like, and so, but think about the impact of that on schools, right? So I guess we're coming out of the summertime. We're going into reopening schools. 6 feet was the absolute worst thing for schools. And what killed me is, like you said, you were screaming at the TV later, right? When they finally came out and said it, I think it was Scott Gottlieb by about January of 2021 was like, oh yeah, well, 6 feet in and of itself was arbitrary. And I was like, dude, I'm like,
that was how they closed schools. Because again, you do 3 feet, which is what Dr. Right. Damsker here said, no, go ahead with 3 feet. And he referenced studies out of Europe at the time that showed it didn't make a difference.
Yep.
He said 3 feet, at 3 feet, it's really hard, but they can make it work. You put kids in closets, you put kids in the gymnasium, the cafeteria, everywhere, and you can make it work. At 6 feet, school's not open.
Which is funny because once you get to 3 feet, you're like, why are we distancing anyway, right? And so,
exactly.
And it's like,
like we said, it's the dominoes. The whole thing falls apart.
Right.
We can have normal life here.
Right, exactly. So 6 feet was the most detrimental because, like you said, that's why we got stuck at my school in a hybrid model where teenagers were only coming to the school building twice a week. Now, remember when you were a teenager, fast forward that with technology everywhere, instantaneous access to everything on your cell phone, HD video games, and imagine how you would perform academically only had to show up in the building 2 out of 7 days. So it made schools not open at all. It made schools do this, you know, hybrid model, which is absolutely terrible. And big props to Souderton. That's the district I pay taxes to. Like, they said, no, hybrid is unworkable. We're sending our high school kids back, you know, 5 days a week. And that was huge, you know.
Well, let's talk about for you. I mean, you get to, this is now the 2020 to 2021 school year, fall. It starts with hybrid. What's that like for a teacher? Because I've always thought that's the worst of the worst for the kids, for the teachers. Like, you basically have to double your work, correct?
Yeah, well, I don't know who came up with hybrid, but it was the worst idea ever. So, and props to Dr. Gallagher there too. He was like, well, hybrid presents more problems than it solves, I think, or something. I remember reading that. I was like, yes, that's what I'm talking about. Can we get this over here? I do have to say, like, well, I guess we'll get into that a little bit. But hybrid, yeah, it's more work for teachers. Your attention is split between the kids at home and the kids at school. You can't really get any flow established because, like, you know, so Monday's launch day for us where it's all online. So I'm like, here's what we're doing for the week. Boom, set them up. Then I only see half the kids the next day. And so, like, I teach them a lesson, and then I got to teach them the same lesson the next day, but I also got to be checking in with the kids that were at home to make sure they did their asynchronous work. And then I, like, do 2 days back-to-back that are the same, and then by the time we get to Thursday, I'm seeing the Tuesday kids, and they forgot what happened on Tuesday, and by the end of the year, weren't even doing the asynchronous work because they found out that they didn't have to turn until Sunday night. That was just a local thing, but There's no flow established, right? Like the great thing about seeing my kids every day is like, hey, we just did this yesterday. Boom, anticipatory set. We do a warm up. We bring them back into gear, and we just keep trucking.
Well, it seems to me like it's more than just what the kids learn. It's that every single day thing, it adds the structure and the consistency that a growing mind needs, especially when you compare it to what do we work like as adults in society. I mean.
Well, not only that, the self-regulation skills. So I will tell you, there was a handful of kids that thrived. I had this one girl, she's like, oh, I'm up at 9 in the morning. I go for a run. I eat a healthy breakfast. But she was a hard outlier, right? And so the flip side of that is the other guy who said, I don't even feel like getting out of bed in the morning. I didn't bother to shave. Like, and dude, that stuff is heartbreaking, man. When you hear a kid like, I can't do anything. I'm helpless. Like I'm just a teacher in a classroom. Like this is the only place I have any say over. And he was that guy was more of the rule than the exception, you know? So yeah, hybrid. I mean, just the lack of structure, as you can imagine then too, like, you know, like you said, getting up the same time every day. Guess what a kid did when they knew they were asynchronous the next day? They stay up till 2 a.m. playing Xbox. Well, and then they get up like totally just like sleep hung over the next day because they only got 3 or 4 hours.
And like you
hours.
Said, it, you can't blame them. I'd have done the sure, same damn yeah. thing. This is on the decision makers
right.
who thought that this was all a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it took so long to get out of that. So that was the other thing that killed me is that, well, I guess it's the bureaucratic nature of how schools run, but data was changing quickly. We were learning a lot of things and we didn't adapt quickly at school level. And like all this to say, this isn't criticizing my particular school because you see it everywhere, right? But it took us till February to get out of this hybrid thing, you know? I had a conversation with somebody and I was like, so I went a month in and I was like, here's 30% of my kids are failing. So this isn't working. And what are we doing about it? And the answer was like, well, we haven't had any complaints and, you know, it seems to be going okay. I'm like, what's the deadline here? Like, when are we going for it? And they're like, we don't know. We have to wait till we hear from the state. And so, yeah, that was killer. That was really killer for me.
Very rough.
Yeah,
it goes back to what you were describing with when Trump spoke about it. That's when it flipped. It's like once this issue, the schools issue, was political and there were two sides to it, nothing was going to change that. No amount of data. It was really just like, our side had to pummel their side into obedience on the issue. Cause it just is so wild to me how much we knew back then that is now being revealed every single day as like a new article and in left-leaning publications as, oh, hey guys, how about this thing? And they're presenting it as if it's some new idea. And we're like, we were talking about this in 2020.
Yeah, and the, you know, like literally today, the New York Times just released an article saying how closing schools was not only terrible for all students, but even worse for, you know, inequities in education for racial minorities, for lower class or lower income, you know, students. The schools that were closed the longest were in those areas. So they were, you know, already having a difficult time. And then you put them at even more of a disadvantage. So like, it is kind of ironic that the same people who were pushing against, you know, because Trump said it, are supposedly like for the little guy or for, you know, for the people that are at a disadvantage. And those were the students harmed the most. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the most heartbreaking stories from this whole thing is in January of 2021, after I posted my my YouTube video about COVID, a bunch of moms stalked me on Facebook in a good way. And they reached out and said, hey, like, we need your voice. Like, we're trying to do this up in Lehigh Valley. So I went up and I DJed. It was like 15 degrees out. We were on a street corner in Whitehall. And I just, this mom just shared her story on the microphone. She's like, I'm a single mom. I have a learning disability. My four kids have learning disabilities. Like, I'm at home. I can't go to work because I got to help my kids. And they're frustrated because they're on the computer. And that's just like, there it is right there, like violating the social contract. And just I was like, I was crying along with her because it was just unconscionable to me that people did that to families. They did that to students. And as we see at the end of this, you know, I've still worn my mask 0 days all this year and been sick 0 days all this year. you know, so we could have done it the whole time. And it's just really frustrating.
It's like the way you're painting the picture is exactly why we were like, okay, we got to figure out where to put these stories. All right, let's make a podcast. Cause it's almost hard now sitting in, we're getting close to summer of 2022. The world feels normal. You at least have choice in almost everything you want to do. It's like thinking about a different universe to think back to that time and everything that everybody went through, all this trauma, this crap we had to deal with. But it's important to tell the story because God, we got to make sure this never happens again.
Yeah, and I think the hardest thing for me was, as a guy who knows physics and read all this stuff, and as like very up on the current science, actual science, not the science in capital letters, but it was like dystopia for me because I have this piece of fabric on my face, right, and trying to communicate with these kids. That's the other thing, the classroom environment. And I mentioned this in the school board speech I made in August of 21, but like the classroom environment just, it was completely different when we took a mask break. So fortunately where I am, they allowed us for a 10-minute mask break. Explain the science to me on that. Don't even get me started, but I'll take it, right? And I was like, I asked around. I was the only teacher that gave a mask break for these high school students all day. So we had these like sacred 10 precious minutes. And of course I was mocking it. I was like, all right guys, we got to start our stopwatch. And like, but I had to stick to it because if I didn't, then like, I could lose my job. And that was the hardest. I'm under all this, like, I felt like I was being watched all the time. So on the one hand, I'm like, this is dumb. Why are we doing this? Like, none of this makes any sense. And the kids are all like depressed and sad and they're not participating and they don't want to talk to each other because every time they say something, somebody's like, oh, can you say that again? I couldn't hear you. You know, this mask break, man, they put their mask down. It's like, you could see this, like, this whole body reaction, like, ah, oh, like finally. And of course it was optional, right? I was like, hey, if you want to take your mask off, you can. If not, that's fine. But the kids that needed to take it off, man, they were like, oh man. And they started chatting and they started raising their hand and they started participating. And it killed me because, you know, you see the Secretary of Ed or the governor gets up to a mic and they take their mask off to speak. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you taking your mask? Like, you're communicating. Mm. It's like, oh, so people can hear what I'm saying. It's like, you realize that we're in a classroom with kids for 8 hours a day and we need to hear what we're saying, right? Not only that, like the facial expressions that you lose, like, you know, how much communication you get through facial expressions. Like, one of the most joyful things for me this year, and I'll always savor this. I think that's one of the things that I took from this is, like, as I tell my students, it's the human experience. I'm like, guys, we got to value this human experience we have together. Just like being able to smile at my kids, like make a weird face and they make a weird face back at you. Like, there's so much of that goes on in a classroom to establish that like culture of learning and like them to know that you care about them that just was impossible to do with masks on your face. And so, yeah, it was.
I want to ask you then, this is, I guess, a scientific question that is unanswered for me. I don't know that anybody's tried to answer this, but I feel like there's a difference between human beings when it comes to like compatibility with the mask. And you were describing in there how, you know, the students that needed that break, they came alive with it. I feel like that's me. I feel like when I go out into the world and I'm surrounded by just masks, or when I have to wear a mask, it's kind of like an off switch for me. It just, I can't connect. It deeply bothers me. Whereas there are other people who, God bless them, mm-hmm. they're not bothered at all. It doesn't even change anything for them. So I don't understand why that difference is. It just seems like maybe there's something that's psychosomatic or whatever that really affects people's ability to deal with whether they're wearing a mask or the people around them are in a mask or whatever.
Yeah, you know, we'll fast forward to June of 21. This is the end of the school year. And I believe it was Central Bucks that led the way and said, we're going mask optional for the last week or two of school. And a lot of people are like, why would you do that? That was huge because Pennridge followed suit, right? And I just got to share this little data point with you. So the first day they were optional, it was like at least 90% of people weren't wearing that, right? Weren't wearing the mask. And I talked a couple kids on the way in. They were like, well, I was like, yeah. Oh, you're not wearing masks? They're like, no. And they're like, well, I brought one in my pocket just in case. And I was like, well, why'd you do that? And they were like, well, because I didn't want to be the only one not wearing a mask. I don't want to get called like a grandma killer or something. All right. So let's just pause on that for a second. Think about that. That means that 90% of the people in the building, and we're talking about children now, we're talking about minors, right? They were socially and psychologically coerced into doing something that they didn't want to do, right? And then you extrapolate that over an entire school year. And I can only imagine, like you said, some people it doesn't bother, right? God bless them, like you said. But to me, like, just knowing the scientific information that I know, knowing that it's like killing the classroom vibes, knowing that kids aren't learning as much, knowing that they're not interacting with each other as much, I'm just like, not only is this not helping anything, it's doing so much harm. I just heard from a occupational therapist about how many kids have underdeveloped facial muscles and are like unable to enunciate their words, and the number of referrals is going through the roof from all these kids that had to wear their mask in preschool all the time. You know, so that's the younger,
it's devastating.
That's the younger side. But then you get to the high school side. You know, like we talked a little bit earlier before this about like behavior for high school students. And I was like, well, you treated them like cattle for like an entire year, like walk one way down the hallway, don't take the mask off your face, like stay apart from each other. Like if you treat kids like they're just, all they are is a vector of disease carrying, then they're going to act like a bunch of vectors of, you know, like they're like, fine, you don't care about me, obviously, as an individual, like screw you, man. And so I think we're seeing the consequences. Like that's just one little blip of the psychological kind of long-term effects of that forced masking for an entire year for those kids. Which is heartbreaking, you know, because how do you begin to undo that? I don't know exactly. I don't know the answer to that question.
And a lot of this damage that's been done, I think the reason that now you're seeing the whole card turn over and all the left-leaning publications are like, oh, all this damage happened, and they're acting like it's a sudden realization now. They want to flip around and start instituting X, Y, and Z programs. I mean, from the state, from the federal level, there's just going to be nonstop programs, endless money to take care of all these issues. And to me, that's just as much apocalyptic as the initial harm was in the first place. Like at the end of the day, you just need to go back to giving them their lives. Like a kid only has one childhood. And as those days tick by, you don't get those days back. That development is not, it's not like you go back and redo it or whatever. So we got to just focus on making sure it stays normal, give them normalcy, and, you know, eventually, hopefully we get on the right track.
Yeah, it's the hopefully, like, so data point, I'm sure you might know this. So the school COVID relief funding was like for a 5-year plan. Did you know that was like spread out over 5 years? So I'm like, wait a minute, why is a majority of the money going to the next 4 years, right? And if COVID's kind of, as we see, it's kind of fading out here. Like you said, they were grabbing that money for that programming. So I don't know if they knew, like, oh crap, we did all this damage to children. And but you see the mental health issues for teenagers going up. That was another killer thing through the lockdowns first, and then the hybrid is like, kids are not doing well. Like, just, yeah, like you said, give them their life back. And that's why it was so awesome, man. One of the greatest days of my life, I'll never forget this, is when I went to senior prom in the gym. So I was like, oh my God, we're in the gym, master optional, we're indoors. And guess what? Everybody had a great time. There wasn't a spike in cases in Bucks County. And they just had prom. They like took selfies together and they goofed around and they danced and they smiled and they had their lives back. And
you had mentioned earlier that came on the heels of Central Bucks saying, okay, last week is going to be optional. A couple other districts did it. And then in Penridge, there was actually this heroic stand of like Sean Whitehurst and Rayleigh. These were kids who basically were shoved into closets because they were like, I'm not doing this anymore. They just took off their masks. Mm-hmm. And we went and did like a couple walkouts for them at school and stuff like that. And sure enough, eventually, finally, a couple days later, I think it was the same day as prom, mm-hmm. Penridge was like, okay, they came up with some excuse for why it's optional. It was based on the heat or something. But like you said, suddenly, instantaneously, prom was allowed to be normal. And you could see it made such a difference in that the kids' lives.
Yeah.
Like that one moment, which you only get one senior prom. There ain't no do-over for that.
Yeah. And that was a huge psychological barrier as a community, right? So one of the biggest things is everybody assumed that the neutral position was, oh yeah, we got to wear masks and do social distancing, right? But it wasn't the neutral position. And because they're like, well, if we even try to not do that, people are going to be furious. And it's like, no, a lot of people actually be happy about that. But because we had normal prom, once we fast forwarded to the fall, that really did a lot to, like, as a community, you can't deny that reality, right? You see the prom happened, you see everyone
you knew where
is good,
at.
And then you're like, oh, so I guess we're going back to school normally. And one of the biggest proud moments I had for my particular district is when Allison Beam dropped her illegal mandate, and I say that because it was deemed by a Democrat majority Supreme Court to be illegal. But at the time, that was in August, because Tom Wolf asked the legislature, hey, can you mandate masks? They're like, nah. School boards, can you mandate masks? They're like, nah, we don't really want to do that. And he's like, pretty please mandate masks. And because he knew he didn't have the authority to do it. And then he just gets this, you know, temporary, you know, health secretary to drop down and smother all the kids again, right? And at this point, we're a week into school already. And so
you're already optional.
Yeah. So yeah, we're already like, bro, we just started school. I actually run the orientation for freshmen. I was in a gym with like 700 kids like the week before Allison Beam comes out and says, oh, the kids got to wear their mask again. And so God bless our school board, man. That letter, I'm going to frame that freaking thing because it was like, no, this is disruptive. We already started the school year and they did everything they could to make a mechanism for masks to be optional, which is why I've worn a mask 0 days this entire school year. And I'm still sitting across the table from you somehow miraculously. I don't know, but
yeah. The story of this school year in Bucks County, I mean, Council Rock, Central Bucks and Penridge never forced masks, always gave parents an ability to choose whether or not their kids were wearing masks from day one and never quarantined a healthy kid. That to me is like, compared to everything else that happened and what went on in the rest of the state, that's somebody at some point has to get like an award for that. Yeah. We have to address that.
Yeah. Heroes
of the pandemic. It was very bold of these board directors. I mean, they were putting a lot on the line. They're being threatened that they're going to get sued. They're going to lose their board insurance or whatever other nonsense they can throw at them. Mm-hmm. And those people at this point, so far into it, they just stood there and said, nope, you're not doing it again.
Which, as you mentioned earlier, is all it would have taken the whole time. So yeah. I was sitting at lunch with a coworker of mine back in January of 21, and we're just frustrated. I'm like, dude, how are we still doing this, right? And I just came to the conclusion, I'm like, I'm just a teacher. Like, I can't fight harder for these kids than their parents can, right? And one time a kid that I know well was the mask really bothered him, like, and he's like, oh, and I was like, dude, you can't have it like all the way on your neck. You got to at least like look like you're trying while you're eating your yogurt back there a little bit. So he's like, whoa, he's trying, and she's talking smack to me. I'm like, and so I pulled him aside. I'm like, dude, you know, this is not my, you know, if I had to say, this wouldn't be the case. Like, you need your parents to speak up for you, right? And like you said, when those couple of parents stood by their kids, like, if 50 or 100 kids showed up with their parents and tried to walk into the school building without a mask on. And so I don't know how you extrapolate that to whatever the next thing is going to be. But I hope that parents, like, I'm really encouraged to see the former school board elections. Parents are really engaged. We got out, you know, we really solidified what's going on in our district, especially. But like, you got to stay engaged, right? Like, they're going to try to, I don't know what's coming next, right? But like, and I know, you know, it's hard. People at my job might say I'm a Trumper or a MAGA guy or I want to kill grandma, or they might say something mean about me. It's like, dude, have you talked to your kid about how they're feeling about this? Like, kids really were suffering. Some kids were really suffering through this. Like you said, some kids didn't have a problem with it. I'm so thankful my kids were young through all this thing. You know, I didn't have that issue.
You mentioned earlier all the damage done to the preschoolers, the younger elementary kids. I mean, for a lot of us who have kids that are that young, at least in that age group, even though harm would have been worse, you still had the ability to shield them in a lot of ways because they don't know what's going on in the world around them.
Yeah.
The high schoolers, man, like they're losing milestones. There's no way to avoid it. They have to deal with the bullying about it. Like, it was, to my estimation, it's like high school kids and college kids had it the worst in all of this.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, when you say that, it reminds me, so many of the high school kids were like, oh, these masks are so dumb. Like, they knew it wasn't doing anything, and yet they still like were doing it, right? So I don't know if you say, well, they're just being good little Christians, respecting authority, you know, reading only the first verse of Romans 13 or whatever. But you know, like, they were like, they knew it was dumb. And so if you force somebody to do something that they know doesn't work, like, all year, and then they just like, it just kind of just like beat you down every day, right? You're like, I guess this is what we're doing again. Like, nobody's standing up for me. Like, where is everybody? You know? And so that was the hardest part for me, to see those kids that were really struggling with it too. But boy, were they happy to come to my classroom for our 10-minute mask break that we religiously took. And then when the weather got nice, we called it the infinite mask hack, because we could go outside and, you know, and then you don't need to wear masks outside.
Mask hack. I love it.
There were some school districts that were like, no, you got to have it on outside. Thank goodness I wasn't at one of those. But yeah, we did a lot of outdoor learning that year too. Yeah.
Well, so how has this year gone? Do you feel like you're back on track now? Because this year in your district, everyone's had the option when it comes to masks. You haven't had kids miss school with quarantines and stuff. So do you feel like, just from a teaching perspective, you're now back to where you were like in 2019 in terms of teaching the kids?
Well, as far as like the daily being able to do my job, it's, you know, operationally we're back to where we were, but we are so far behind in every metric imaginable. So if you want to quantify learning loss, like, just so I teach multiple levels of physics, right? I teach AP all the way down to academic, all the way down to like the everyman's physics class, right? And we've seen a giant increase in the enrollment in lower level classes. Well, why do you think that is? Well, you go back, it's because kids were in hybrid or online, so they got lower grades than they ever have before in their life. As we mentioned, I don't fault them for it. We didn't have a really good system set up, and they, you know, like there's a reason we didn't let kids on screens for 7 hours a day pre all of this, right? Remember when we used to know that that was a bad idea to have kids staring at a screen for 7 hours a day? And they were like, oh, you have to actually do that now, right? So they all got worse grades through the hybrid nonsense and everything. So now they're all in lower level classes. And that's actually going to track with them for the rest of their high school career too, right? Like, already I heard that we're not going to run one of our upper level courses next year because nobody's enrolling in it. So, and there's students in my, you know, for example, academic class that very well should be in honors, but they got terrible grades last year because of the model that we set up for them. So I was talking to my dad about this. Like, he said, well, what's the solution? You were mentioning like, they're just going to throw money at it and whatnot. I'm glad that we're going to try to counsel students through the trauma we put them through, I guess. But like, I don't know how you chip away and chip back at that. You know, just the algebra skills are lower because they didn't learn as much algebra. And that's very pertinent to me doing physics. It's just, yeah, I mean, I'm glad I'm joyful every day. Like, I love seeing my students and we're learning stuff. But it's going to be really interesting to see how, especially like how the middle school, the kids, once they come up, how this all, the long-term effect. You want to talk about long-term effects. They were like, we don't know the long-term effects of COVID. I'm like, well, we know the long-term effects of school shutdowns, and we've always known them. And we harmed kids for the sake of helping them or keeping them safe or something. Like, that's, I don't know, that's the part that bothers me the most about reflecting on these last few years.
There's something else relevant to this topic that you said earlier about the disadvantaged kids. And I feel like when it comes to, like, how do we get back on track? Well, most middle-class families, like, you can tutor your kid over the summer, you can take extra steps. Like, a lot of people will catch their kids up if they're not already, because some parents pay attention, spend more time, spend money, whatever. But when you're talking about those disadvantaged kids, it's what the hell are you going to do? Like you said, they miss a year. There's really nothing you can do with that. You have to just kind of repeat the building blocks to cross the same bridge.
Yeah, and that's the question. Like, do you have them repeat the grade? Because right now it's just kind of the idea is like, oh, just move them through. That's not serving them any, you know? So
there was a school board director in Pennsbury who on a school board meeting, this was like fall of 2020, said, yeah, we know this is terrible, but honestly, we're all just going to have to accept that this is a throwaway year for the kids.
Dang.
And it's like, you don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
To me, fine. I'm 35. Throw away a year of my life so we can play this stupid game where we think we're fighting a disease that we're doing nothing really against. Mm-hmm. But to a kid, that you just changed everything. Like, yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. It's not good. Yeah. It was crazy. One of my like mantras is like, I can only control what happens in my classroom. And so to rewind real quick to the beginning of the thing, I wrote down three things on a piece of paper and I told this to all my students that first week. The three points were, I'm grateful to be here. I'm thankful that I have a job and I'm not afraid of you. And I think that was so important to set that ground rule because, you know, teachers had shower curtains around their desks. And a girl told me that she went to take a sip of her water bottle. She pulled down her mask and the teacher's like, you got to do that out in the hallway. Like, teachers were projecting their anxiety and their fear onto children. And I wanted to make and that broke my heart. Right. But again, I can only control what happened in my classroom. So I just tried to make my classroom like the most, and like I started Freestyle Fridays where I rap every Friday, like just anything to bring these kids joy, you know, through all of this nonsense, you know. That was the way I coped with it personally. And looking back, like I always ask myself the question, like, could I have done more? You know, like I made a YouTube video for Whoop-De-Doo, like, you know, a couple people see, I hope it made an impact. You know, I made another one in January when a lot of schools were still closed. Like, let's get some more information out here. We have updated data. You know, I went to my school board meeting where I live and tried to advocate for those kids to have optional masks. And, of course through the whole thing, I think I made about 100 YouTube videos like of educational content in that year of COVID. So I was just trying to make myself productive. I'm like, I'm still getting paid through all this, which was another thing that killed me. Like, teachers weren't really in any hurry to go back because our paychecks didn't stop. Well, I was in Harrisburg of April 2020 because a lot of my friends were out of work, and I'm like, we need to get people back to work. So I don't know if it's because teachers were isolated, like, you know, I don't know if they have like little bubble communities or what, but I got a lot of contractor friends and like a guy who signed a mortgage for a house only to be told the next day that construction was shut down. So he's carrying two mortgages with five kids unexpectedly. Oof. Like this is what people are going through. So yeah, it was difficult. I just try to bring as much joy as I can to my classroom every day. Try to teach physics to an excellent degree as I can, you know, and make the kids feel like they're learning a lot of stuff. Work them hard, hold them to high standards, you know. But yeah, it was definitely a rough year for.
Well, let's end with just one more question on that same point. Then, I mean, I think the distinction between teachers and how they handled COVID. And I'm just going to go out and say, I think talking to you and seeing what you did with the YouTube channel, you're obviously just a teacher who cares. So COVID, no COVID, you're going to be throwing in energy, really trying to make a difference in the kids' lives. That's how all teachers should be. I feel like if I put myself back to like high school Josh, I would be able to very clearly tell the difference between the teachers who are treating me like I'm a human being and like trying to teach me and the teachers who are all up and affected by COVID. What is that distinction like for your students? I mean, I don't know how exactly to ask this question, but you know what I mean? Like, let me think. Now I'm going to have to like edit the crap out of this question, but
no, it's all good. I see what you're getting at. And that's why I started the year the way I did. And this was the hardest part. Like, kids are being told different things from their parents from all over the place. And I got to respect that. Right. So, you know, when I said, I'm not afraid of you, I'm like, we're going to follow the guidelines. I got to throw that out there. Cause I don't know who's who. Right. We're going to do our, you know, our 6 feet, you know, during our mask break kind of thing. But I wanted them to know, like, I am not afraid of you. Like,
right.
Like, there were kids that got yelled at, like they were coming up with a paper to ask their teacher a question. And the teacher said, no, stay back. That's trauma right there. Like, you just inflicted trauma on a child. And so I'm sure they realized that. And for me, this whole thing, like, I'm a Christian. Like, I do what I do for Jesus, like, for the glory of God. I show up, I try to work excellently. I try to love my students. And just like let them know like you're an awesome human and treat them well. And so I hope that, you know, in the years coming back, I advised the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and we had a little thing, and this old guy, Coach Les, he was the president for a long time. He's old Marine guy, and we were chatting after the little thing, and he stopped me. He said, "Matt," like old guys do, you're walking away. The old guy said, "Matt, one day when you're an old geezer like me, you're gonna start getting phone calls, and they're just gonna keep thanking you. Those kids, they don't know how to thank you right now, but when you get older like me, they're gonna start blowing up your phone, and then you'll know you made a difference." And so, all I could do was, you know, before God, just work my hardest, love my kids the way I knew how to love them, teach with as much energy and enthusiasm, and give them those little snippets of fun in a really rough year as possible. And the rest is just, you know, hoping that light shines through in their lives in a really dark year.
Well, it's a absolutely great place to end it, because it makes a difference. And I think it's very on brand with this group that we all shared together. Like, everybody only had the one role to play that they could, but together, yo, we made a difference. Mm-hmm. And in your case, absolutely must have made a difference in a lot of kids' lives. So thanks for everything you did. Thanks for being a part of Reopen Bucks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. It's been cool to see you guys. If we had a little bit more of that, I think we could have, pushed back a little bit earlier for the activism. But I love what you guys did, and love that we're time capsuling this and capturing that. So yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll see if we need to be back battling the schools this fall.
Sure hope not.
All right. We'll see you. Thanks again.
Yep.